imagine they well play the game. Victims of a modern world, circumstances brought us here. Armageddon's come too near, too, too near now. Farsight is the only key to save our children's destiny. The consequences are so grave, so, so grave now. The hypocrites, we are their slaves. So my friends, to stop the end, on each other. Money's on the menu in my favorite restaurant. Well, don't talk about quantity, 'cause there's no fish left in the sea. Greedy men been killing off the lot, the rapper was. And you better play it nature's way, or she won't take it all away. And don't try and tell me you know my band, her bad, right from wrong. Oh, you've upset the balance, man. Done the only thing you can. Now my life is in your hands.
On KZFR 90.1 Chico, listener-supported radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. And you're listening, as I said, to Ecotopia, exploring ecosystems, environmental, technological, and social. I'm Susan Trudy.
And I'm Stephen Trudy. Tonight we'll be talking to two of the new members of the Chico Climate Action Commission. They were chosen by four members of the city council. They nominated Ashley Kohler, Joshua Pierce, and by Kirk Kaufman and Brian Kress to the vacant seats, which come with four-year terms. The council voted unanimously to appoint the four individuals.
Our guests tonight are Brian Kress and Anne by Kirk Kaufman. Anne by Kirk Kaufman is a professor of geology at Chico State, and Brian runs Dayani, which is a digital design and technology company in Chico that helps improve climate change outcomes with organizations and companies.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Neil Yelland, a financial advisor with Edward Jones in Chico. No matter where you are in life's journey, Neil can offer guidance and strategies for wealth and retirement income, college savings, accounts, estate, and legacy plans, charitable giving, and more. For consolation or more information, reach Neil at 530-345-8913. He's on the corner of 3rd Avenue and the Esplanade. Neil Yelland, Edward Jones member, SIPC. And we're also supported by the generous contributions of the merchants at 4th and Broadway in downtown Chico. Baker's Birkenstock, Cotton Party, Chico Paper Company, offering a unique selection of clothing, jewelry, footwear, custom framing, and artwork of all kinds. Located close to nearby parking, cafes, eateries, and the skating rink, Cotton Party, Baker's Birkenstock, and Chico Paper Company are here to serve you. I want to remind you that the opinions expressed on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the station, the management, the board of directors, the programmers, or the staff.
Or the underwriters.
We'll take a short break and be back to talk with Brian Kress and Anne Bykirk Kaufman. This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico.
When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright, take the shine and be the light, give it life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright, take the shine and be the light, give it life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when When you see the sun is bright, make it shine and be the light. Give it life and raise it high. Let me tell you about the one. Thinking about the living sun. Energy so powerful. Wonder where it's coming from. Never leaving, only spinning. Feeding energy that's gleaming. Giving life to planet seas. Solar system, the body. One of many galaxies. Universe, imagine this. Every speck's a living species with its own reality. Or here's a who. True, zoom in and out. Bloom first the truth and let it shade you. See the people walking on the street, stressing out, hoping they see the truth, knowing what it's all about. Finding answers to the question they've always had. We're tiny cells, particles, organisms, true. United with something special, big, enormous, huge. We got to play the tune and show the pick and tell the youth. The seventh sun, solar power, that's what I do. What I do, what I do, what I do, what I do. I keep it pumping every time I ride, feel divine. The energy inside is heating up, oh so high. Messenger from the core, always speak my mind. Solar power energy, only way to go. The time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light. Giving life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light. Giving life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light. Giving life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light. Giving life and raise it high. Be my words, we need the sun to save our earth and live some more. Giving power to the car and home, begin to heal the globe. Getting closer to the end, I see she hurts and won't take more. It's not the planet I'm concerned, humankind it just won't learn. Clear the road and pave it for a better day, a better place. The sun is giving life, yup. Take the bread and eat with grace. Technology for smarter ways, and use our hearts and brains. Erase destructive games that only shame the human race in every way. Evolution far behind, my solution, use a mind. Resolution, clear the skies, living earth. Things unify, we have the power to create, justify, believe, positive love for all living beings on planet Earth. I keep it pumping every time I ride, feel divine. The energy inside is heating up, oh so high. Messenger from the core, always speak my mind. Solar power energy, only way to go. The time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light. Give it life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light. Give it life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light. Give it life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico, and with us on the phone now are Ann Bikert-Kaufman and Brian Kress. They are two of the new commissioners appointed to the Chico Climate Action Commission. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks for having us.
It's
on. Yeah.
Great. It's okay if you talk together. We'll sort it out. So let's just start with a little bit about you. Let's start with Anne and talk a little bit about your background, how you came to be interested in climate issues, kind of what your history is in working on this kind of thing.
Okay, well, I am a geology professor at Chico State, so I have been there for 31 and a half years now. And as a geology student, as an undergraduate way back in the 1970s, I distinctly remember learning about fossil fuels, and I went to one of my professors and I said, aren't we going to run out of oxygen if we keep burning these fossil fuels? And he said, well, we probably don't have to worry about running out of oxygen, but we should probably think about how much CO2 we're putting in the air. So I've been aware of the issue since the 1970s, and just over time I became more and more aware of the issue. And then 10 years ago, I started teaching a lower division general education course that was focused on critical thinking, and what I chose to have us think critically about was climate change. And so every semester for 10 years, I've been teaching this class, and so I've become more and more aware of the issue and the science behind it, and seeing that it's becoming more and more urgent that we do something about it. And I just entered the faculty early retirement program, where I only teach half time, and I thought, okay, now is the time for me to actually do something about all of this information that I have gained all these years.
Your course sounds fascinating. I'm guessing that you did a lot with climate deniers versus science and other topics like that. Was that part of the critical thinking course?
Yes, and the nature of the arguments used, and where are the flaws in the arguments, and what are some of the tricks that the climate change deniers use to try to make it sound like they have a reasonable argument, but don't actually.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. There was an article in the Enterprise Record just today, somebody saying that climate education is not working with kids, because they only quoted one example, a kid who said, "My parents told me it's all baloney." But clearly, there are a lot of folks out there who are climate deniers, or who are not, at least in our view, exercising their critical thinking caps as they explore the idea.
And, of course, that is part of the Climate Action Plan education and outreach. And so you've already been doing that education and outreach, so great. Brian, let's turn to you and talk a little bit about your history. And I'm curious about your business as well.
Sure. I'm a relative newcomer in the climate space. My background's actually, I spent most of my career in the kind of digital world. I'm a millennial, and I got excited, in the early days of the internet about building websites and applications and the things startups were doing, and all the kind of tips and tricks and techniques that they were using to, build these kind of out of nowhere successful products and companies that kind of really disrupted traditional industries. And so I worked for most of my career with pretty large clients, as well as helping startups create new ideas and grow them. But after living in California for the last decade or so, and certainly with Campfire, it was pretty clear that I could use the same kinds of skills that, I had been developing to help address, bigger challenges than, building and growing companies, or at least, point those companies towards kind of the biggest challenges of our time, which is, clearly climate change. And so I kind of broke off with my team a year ago, and founded a company, here in Chico that's called Diani, where we use this kind of history of product development and skills and knowledge about how to spur behavior change to help our clients address the causes and consequences of climate change. The insight, I guess, for the company is just that digital products kind of have a lot of history, and they're maybe famous for, building habits and forming habits. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they do all too good of a job of kind of creating habits.
Yeah.
They can be harmful. So we try to take those kind of habit-forming techniques and find ways to help companies and institutions form better habits, ones that are positive for the climate and positive for communities. And so that's the project that we've kind of been on for just a year. So, this year has been a really, huge crash course for me, and, learning about climate change and what's possible through science and through technology. And it's been, just a fire hose of information to try to wrap my arms around the challenges ahead, but also the massive opportunities that are in front of us.
It sounds amazingly relevant. That is, if you can help us change our habits, regarding climate change. That's a huge issue.
Can you talk a little bit about what you understand the Climate Action Commission to be and to do? What sort of legal status does it have? What's its role?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, just from my point of view, and maybe Anne has a different point of view, it kind of serves as an advisory, it's an advisory role, right? So it takes a body of people that are experts or passionate about climate action and almost serves as something of a filter that helps kind of craft recommendations and policy that help us address climate action as a city. So, you know, lowering emissions, increasing equity, and building out kind of a resilient community, you know, in a way that keeps us in line with the goals that the nation and the state have outlined, and ensures that our, you know, our city continues to thrive, you know, throughout the century.
Anne?
Yeah, so there are a number of commissions that the city of Chico has. So, for example, there's the Planning Commission. And so we're sort of the same status as those commissions. And, yeah, they serve as advisory boards. So we're all appointed by the city council. And the standard term is 4 years. And so we meet once a month, and the biggest thing that was done recently was to put together the update to the Climate Action Plan. It was just approved just this year.
Mm-hmm. It was actually the commission was a little bit shaky for a couple minutes there when the city council didn't know if they wanted it to be a commission. And my understanding is that with a commission, you have much more staff support and it has more status. And not that the city council can't ignore you as a commission, but it has a bit more clout. So were you watching that and were you concerned about any of that? I was.
I was watching that and I was concerned about that. And I did go to the city council meeting where the proposal was put forth a second time to disband the Climate Action Commission, and you know they didn't end up doing that.
Right.
So
mm-hmm. Right.
I was very happy about that outcome.
And I'm not sure when you originally applied, but I think they were taking applications right at the beginning of the year, and I had applied, I think, in March and thought I was pretty late to the game. And and so it's been waiting with bated breath for nearly the whole year.
Well, yeah, and then when things look like they might fall apart, you probably didn't know what your status was going to be. But, yeah, I think it's really important that the Climate Commission has been able to maintain that status.
And it's important. We'd like to point out again that the commissions are advisory. We wish they had more than advisory power. But so their recommendations do have to go back to the city council. And depending on the flow of the city council, there were some pretty negative anti-climate change statements made by council members at the very meeting that you are alluding to that were deeply concerning.
But the Climate Action Plan update did pass, and I believe it was unanimous. I don't think that there were any nay votes, and so that puts the Climate Action Plan into, you know, some position of power.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What are the major goals of the Climate Action Plan as you understand them? And I don't know if I should call on you or if you just want to start and see who wins. Anne, go ahead.
Okay, I will go ahead. Well, the main goal is for the city of Chico to align with state law. So it was it's basically required that every city meet certain emissions goals. And so we met the first round. And so the purpose of the Climate Action Plan was to propose ways for Chico to meet the second round. And I don't have the exact numbers at the tip of my tongue.
I think I have them. I put them in my notes here. So emissions have decreased overall 27% since 2005. That's 42% per person in spite of the large population increase. But the city of Chico now is working toward reducing greenhouse gas emissions consistent with the state goal to reduce them 40% below the 1990 level by 2030. And that's not very far away, and 40% is a lot. And that was established by Senate Bill SB 32. And then the long-term goal is carbon neutrality by 2045. And that was established by Executive Order B-5518. So those are substantial increases and ambitious, I think.
And one thing about that executive order that I think is interesting is just it's the way it's worded is kind of like as soon as possible, but no later than 2045. Mm-hmm. And so there's almost this part of it that is, you know, the bare minimum is to meet 2045, but there's an encouragement for, you know, I think cities like ours to move more quickly where possible, and accelerate, and, you know, be on top of that, reduction, you know, before the rest of the state has it mandated.
Right,
and it's really, really important to do that because the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change just came out with a report in August.
Mm-hmm.
And this didn't get a whole lot of press, but one of the things that they said is if we want to have an 83% chance of keeping global warming to within 1.5 degrees above industrial levels, then we essentially have to leave 90% of known fossil fuel reserves in the ground.
Wow.
And so we can only emit, this is worldwide, we can only emit a total of 300 more gigatons of CO2 into the air. And right now, we humans on Earth emit 40 gigatons a year. So if we would keep burning at that rate, we would have 7.5 years left if we wanted to keep it to 300 gigatons total. So we have to, this is really urgent. We have to act fast. We have to act as quickly as we possibly can.
And so what is the commission supposed to do about that? I mean, I know there are the specific strategies, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but how does a commission put strategies like that into operation, or how have you thought about that? I mean, it's kind of a big ask.
Yeah, I think the way that I have thought about it is that the first thing to do is to quickly implement the strategies that we've already outlined, and be like the these next few years are, we like take them as the emergency that they are, and use those strategies as the foundation to meet and accelerate the targets that they've outlined. And there's plenty of work to be done, you know, in the plan. And so that's I think that's the kind of starting point. And there's a lot of, you know, things to be excited about.
I agree.
You know, in that plan and in those strategies that I think can get us, like, can move us really quickly along, you know, that trajectory.
I guess one of the... Go ahead, Anne.
Well, you know, the specific measures in the plan, mostly what they do is to sort of get out of the way of people who want to do the right thing and get in the way of people who do not. So, for example, make it easier to own an electric car by having more charging stations in town. I mean, an electric car, even when most of the electricity is generated by fossil fuels, emits half the CO2 of a gas-powered car. So, making it easy for people to do the right thing.
One of the things that interests me, and we'll get, I want to get into the weeds of the strategies in a couple minutes. But one of the things that interests me, and we've interviewed Sheree Chastain a couple of times. I don't know what
Sorry about that.
It sounded like a organ chord that tells you how dramatic all this is. Cap plan has some over, or the commission has some over, and the document has some overarching principles that talk about a strong community. And what I like about that, it's not just about sort of making sure that we reduce energy, but we do it in a way that's good for the whole community. And I wonder if you have attended to that, and if you have any thoughts about that. If you don't, I do.
Well, I really got drawn into this because of my interest in bicycle commuting. I've been a bicycle commuter all my life. And I specifically purchased a house along Lower Bidwell Park so that my commute could be through the park to the university every day.
Nice.
And also, I'm from the Netherlands originally. And a few years ago, we went back there to visit and did a bicycle tour. And I was astounded at what can be done. And so I am so excited about what we could possibly do in Chico. It doesn't have to be expensive. It can actually save money to put in bicycle infrastructure because it would increase the number of people riding bicycles and decrease the wear and tear on the roads. So I'm just really excited about doing something to encourage bicycling, and, you know, not to require people to do it, but to make it possible for people who want to commute by bicycle.
Precisely.
Go ahead.
So 60% of the CO2 emissions in Chico are from burning gasoline and diesel.
Mm-hmm. We spoke to a person up in Canada a couple of weeks ago who talked about, he raved about the Netherlands. And he said it takes a cultural change for bikes to take, and for other changes to take place. But he said specifically the Netherlands, Amsterdam, was a bicycling city, and then people started to put in more paved roads, more high-rise, more apartment buildings. He said, and the people rose up en masse and demanded greater accommodation for bikes, bike parking, triple-decker bike parking structures. But his point was you can't mandate it. You can lead people to the water and encourage that kind of cultural change, which sounds like what you're talking about.
Well, they started 50 years ago to really seriously make bicycling easy and safe and comfortable. So it's taken them 50 years to get to where they are today. And they didn't mandate anybody having to ride a bicycle. They just made it so easy to do And nobody there would want to go back to the way it was, to have a car-dominated transportation system.
I think one of the things that we need, and this there's some reference to this in the update of the Climate Action Plan, and that is infill housing rather than sprawling out into the foothills and way south and way north makes it really hard to create that bicycle culture. But there is a lot of land, and I don't think people realize how much land, small plots, not where you can build 1,000 houses, but small plots where you can build apartments and houses and make it easier for people to be within the community and make it easier to bike. I also think about tricycles. I have a friend, an older gentleman, older than I am, which is like older than God, who used a tricycle because he just didn't have the balance that he had anymore. And so, you know, making people feel safe when they're on all kinds of wheeled vehicles seems really important to me, too.
That's one of the things that happened in the Netherlands. When they really made it easy and comfortable to ride a bicycle, they suddenly made it also very easy and comfortable for people on wheelchairs and all kinds of mobility vehicles. They even have these tiny little cars that you sort of roll your wheelchair into, and they're allowed to use the bike lanes and park on sidewalks. And so people who were not able to get out and about because they couldn't drive suddenly could.
Steve and I also have this thing, having traveled in Europe quite a bit, of creating some big walking streets, maybe making Main and Broadway walking streets and having people use, or maybe just Broadway and using Main and Salem as one-way streets so that people can feel safer bicycling, but then walk more. Any ideas?
Yeah,
Brian?
No, I love that idea. And I think there are probably lots of, and I haven't poured over the bicycle master plan, but that's, I think, the kind of you know, opportunities that we should keep an eye out for and be encouraging, because it's both about you know, making those, they're like, yeah, you're right about infill, you know, get people closer to each other, make it easy for them to, you know, walk or bike to each other, or to a kind of the downtown or downtown-ish areas that we have, and then make it, you know, once they're there, you know, easy to safely park their bikes, or whatever other, you know, modes of transport they have, and make it feel, you know, really robust, so that if there's any worry about, you know, losing this thing, or, you know, that you're making an investment just to get it stolen, something, that kind of thing, that you solve that problem too. And then also, you know, if they do have to drive, then make it more appealing for them to be driving, you know, towards downtown or towards populated areas in an EV than in a, you know, a gasoline car.
Right.
I think all those things, you know, there's some of that in the plan as it is right now. But also, you know, more planning, you know, the plan kind of calls for more planning to be done on some of these topics.
You're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. We're talking with Brian Kress and Ann Bikerk-Kaufman, new commissioners for the Climate Action Commission. We want to take a short break, come back to ask them about some other aspects of the general plan and their thoughts on how they can be implemented. This is Ecotopia on KZFR.
Switch off the mind and
This is Ecotopia on KZFR. We're talking with Brian Kress and Biker Kaufman. They're commissioners for the Climate Action Commission. We were talking a little bit about bicycle transit. One of the elements of the master plan, the green plan, is achieving shared mobility and transit programs and infrastructure. I'm thinking a lot of that is buses. And personally, I've lived here for 12 years, have never taken a Beeline bus, I'm embarrassed to say. But they don't go where I'm going. And given the amount of suburban sprawl we already have in Chico, it's really tough to create bus lines that serve people frequently. I wonder if you have thoughts on what we might be doing in the transit area. Bigger buses, smaller buses?
Well, what they've found when they look at successful transit systems is that whatever it is, whether it be a bus or a tram or whatever, that they have to come frequently.
Yes.
Every 10 minutes is the ideal, so that you can just sort of show up and pretty soon you'll get your ride.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's essential, and that's, of course, really expensive to start that up. But that's what needs to happen. So perhaps a way to start that would be a particular busy route and just say, okay, we're going to try it on this route and just do it every 15 minutes or something. But one issue is that the city of Chico really doesn't have jurisdiction over the bus system.
Yes.
BCAG, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, one of the things that happens is that the city cooperates with BCAG in, you know, for example, BCAG does the assessment of housing that's needed, and Chico has to respond to that. They have to be, I mean, not that they always meet the goals that they're supposed to reach, but that cooperative work between agencies and government seems really important, and working with BCAG seems like a no-brainer.
And they have some good people there too.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I read a futuristic article that talked about communities might start the equivalent of an Uber or Lyft system instead of trying to work with the bus schedules. Communities buy electric cars, probably self-driving cars, and people can get a ride quickly through the community system. Don't know whether that's practical or not, but it's an interesting alternative idea to trying to reform the bus system.
Yeah,
and there's car sharing systems too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and they're encouraging some of those, that car sharing. I even saw a. I guess there's a little bit of kind of looking into the crystal ball about if something like self-driving cars were to come online, and you know, you find anybody from a couple years out to 10 years out, you know, saying that we'll be ready for anything like that, But there is that, with at least, you know, until that kind of day comes, I think they just said a few days ago, I want to say, that they were going to offer, if for anybody that works in downtown Chico, free transit, you know, on those buses. And I think that's, you know, you can start to see, or you can imagine at least, that how making that easily, you know, taking a high transit area like the downtown area, and making it really easy for people that are there all the time to build that into their routine, that you can start building towards that culture, that kind of a more of a transit style culture.
One of the interesting things about the climate action plan, the major sources of greenhouse gas emissions are buildings, transportation, waste, and water. And it's interesting that in the energy section, a lot of this seems to be city actions that are going to be required. I mean, it's not just personal choice, but the city will be involved in making decisions about how things work. For example, measure one, E1, is to get carbon-free electricity through, we're supposed to have a CCA soon, I think, and maintain opt-out rates of 5% for residential and 15% for commercial. So you either participate in this or you pay like a premium or a, I don't know if that's the word for it. And then measure E2 is eliminating natural gas in all new building construction in 2025 and reduce natural gas by 6% by 2030 and 16% by 2045. And then measure E is electrify existing residential buildings to reduce overall residential gas consumption. So these are, again, this involves city buy-in and the city being very proactive. How do you see things like that working? Do you see those as having potential?
Well, there's also pressure from the state on the city,
correct,
to implement these kinds of things. And they're starting with new construction, so it's pretty easy with new construction to just not build in gas lines, and that actually saves construction costs to not have those gas lines. So they're starting with easy to implement measures, and then over time, as people remodel their homes, that then they would be required to be all electric. So it's not an all at once kind of thing. It is sort of letting it organically happen.
And I think with the building, with the eliminating natural gas and building construction, I think a thing to be that we should keep an active monitor on, especially as we're doing, replacing equipment that fails, is that being distributed equitably and making sure that that folks are able to stay in their homes and we're not kind of exacerbating gentrification or any other kind of equity issues along the way. And because as you replace old equipment with new equipment that's green, then there's a potential for that to be a raise rents or create more value for a home that somebody needs to have. And so it's a kind of a delicate balance to keep aware of, and something where the city might need to look for ways to help fund some of those replacement costs for a lower income community or household.
And that's a really important aspect. Sorry, Brian. I'll just say this quickly and you can finish.
No.
That's a really important aspect of the Climate Action Plan, that we're attending to everybody in the community, not just the people who can afford to, step up to these new things. And social equity and environmental justice is an important consideration in this plan.
And that's kind of one of the things I'm excited about with, I guess it's kind of nerdy to be excited about a CCA, but with you know, and maybe it's like for any listeners that just aren't aware of what that those programs are, it's just it allows us as a county to make our own decisions about where our energy comes from. And the idea behind, they're calling it Butte Choice Energy, is that at a for a kind of slight premium, then community members can have the opportunity to, you know, have 100% renewable carbon-free energy coming to their houses. And it's a automatic opt-in for all households, and then they can opt out and go back to kind of PG&E's, you know, delivery and power plants if they so choose. But that's, I think, how you keep that 5%. And when we look at where we can generate power within Chico, installing that in lower income areas as a way to kind of bring equity, bring jobs, bring opportunity to those areas is something that I think we will keep an eye on, and is a big opportunity for us to make sure that the actions, or one of the actions that we take, continues to lift all boats.
Yes.
Sounds like you're really talking two different routes. One, we can mandate that new building construction be all electric and have solar panels and so forth. Thinking about things like remodels, a little bit more difficult there. You do really have to rely on cooperation with consumers and making it very appealing. You can't mandate a kitchen remodel quite the way you can mandate new construction.
And of course, we do already require that new buildings have solar. Mm-hmm. So we're going in the right direction.
I want to ask about trees, carbon sequestration. One of the plans is to increase the urban canopy cover by at least 10% by 2030 through new greenscaping programs. And I'm wondering if you've had a chance to think about those, as well as the Urban Forest Master Plan.
That has so many other benefits besides carbon sequestration.
Yes.
It makes neighborhoods cooler. It makes them more pleasant. I don't see how you could argue against doing something like that.
I suppose
the city of trees, right?
So we're the city of trees.
Let's
we also have to take into consideration. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Brian.
No, that was it. It was just let's keep that reputation going.
But we're in a drought, and trees suck up water. We've talked with a couple of people on the program who say the benefit from having the canopy outweighs the water. Nevertheless, we're getting tighter and tighter in our water supply.
But Steve and I are going to argue
we'll
this now.
Take this over.
When you have shade, you have less, you have more water staying in the ground. You don't have things drying out in the same way with shade. And I wish we could get rid of more concrete too, and make it more possible, because that's a huge load on the heat thing.
Yeah, and also, it
really
depends on what kinds of trees you grow.
Yes.
And we have a lot of oak trees; they don't require nearly as much water as some other kinds of trees.
Yeah,
and we know that the Urban Forestry Project is actually, Urban Forest Master Plan is looking at growing trees that are currently growing well further south, assuming that there may still be climate change, looking for trees that will grow in the future. Yeah, indeed. I wonder if we could maybe switch to community outreach and education a little bit. And I'm thinking, again, about your critical thinking class. What sorts of things can we do within the community? And I'm thinking in particular, we have both had long contact with the public schools, thinking about what we could do with our elementary and secondary school kids to engage them in implementing the program. But what are your thoughts in general about outreach and education?
Well, That's a tough nut to crack, and I think probably the main thing is not necessarily to convince people of anything about the science. That's really hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
But there are just so many side benefits to a lot of the solutions, and it helps to have the focus there. And there is James Hansen, who was the climate scientist, mm-hmm. who first really basically told the world, look, we have to do something about this in 1988. He put out a paper today, and he was saying we really need to have a price on carbon, and we need to redistribute that money directly to the people. And if we had that kind of thing in place, then you wouldn't have to educate people. It would just save so much money to use less energy or to use more renewable energy that people would just do it, and they would love that check every month that would come in, the dividend from the companies who are having to pay those fees.
Mm-hmm. We've interviewed Gordon Gregory a couple of times. He's very active in that carbon tax and rebate movement.
Yeah, the Citizens Climate
Lobby.
But there's also a conservative group that is pushing for this kind of thing. So it cuts across the political spectrum. It doesn't become a partisan issue then.
Right. Yeah, because it seems like once it becomes partisan, people can't agree. And so it seems that the collaborations and the cooperations are on the kinds of things you're talking about, and the kind of no-brainer things, you know, grow more trees, use more bicycles. Both of those are pretty fun things.
I think, especially when it comes to, you know, young people in the city, there's already a lot of climate anxiety, you know, kind of rampant in those, and it's kind of less about for them in a lot of cases. It's less about helping them understand the threats, and they have to be aware of carbon and those kinds of things, but instead helping them channel their actions and or like that anxiety towards action.
Right.
There are a lot of kind of growing programs, especially for K-12, you know, kinds of students that are about getting active and engaged in the community and kind of leading with your curiosity and leading with love and excitement for the things that are working, so you can continue to, you know, invest in these ecosystems that support you. Because assuming that we get through our carbon challenge, and that's a big assumption, but let's hope that's the case. Well, they'll, you know, that generation will need to continue to sustain and create, you know, resilient ecosystems that are circular, and there's still a sustainability, like an overarching kind of sustainable culture that we need to adopt, and that's the generation that's going to kind of spearhead that. And so I almost feel like you could, if we can work with local schools, then they might actually, we might even have a kind of youth-led outreach program that can get us more active in communities that, you know, don't really want to just have somebody come in and give them a lecture and leave, but instead, you know, want someone young and excited to be, you know, asking curious questions and getting and moving them in the right direction. You know, someone that they love doing that for them, you know. So I'd be excited to kind of think about what those programs might be, because, yeah, the plan is just calling for us to think through what those options, what possible options we have there, and I think there's a whole lot of them.
I am really glad that you two are new commissioners on the Climate Action Commission. I think that you have really wonderful ideas and positive visions, and good luck with it all. We're really happy that you're doing this work. We're ending up our talk with Brian Kress and Ann Bikert Kaufman, new commissioners on the Climate Action Commission. Thanks so much for talking to us, and we're looking forward to seeing your work.
Thank you.
Well, thanks so much.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico. Excellent interview with Brian Kress and Ann Bikert Kaufman. As Susan said, we're really pleased that they're on the Climate Action Commission. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we'll hear Bobby Tryon. She has Nicole Bateman of Habitat for Humanity as her guest. Then at 6:30 is Ginger Nichols with Radioactive. This does not mean we're advocating more nuclear power in the North State, does it? You can listen to our old shows, better known as previous shows. Check out our list of resources. Go to our website, ecotopiakzfr.com. We want to thank you for listening. We're always open to your suggestions, by the way. ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. Shoot us an email.
Next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothes and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years and is located at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling the Cotton Party at 893-4923 and by the printed image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico